Welcome back to episode 22 of the Run It Three Ways podcast. This week we've got a pretty bog standard, nothing special episode for you, but after 22 masterpieces, I'm sure you're used to that by now. This week has a shitty recap from Callum, a look at some of the running results from around the world, including some pretty impressive results from Copenhagen, and of course, our loyal listeners' questions. How are we doing, boys?
Hello, boys. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm sweating a little bit because I had to force feed myself a bowl of chili. I put too many jalapenos in it. And I started eating it at the time we were meant to start recording. So apologies for that, but I'm paying the price now.
Have you just rustled that up tonight then? Or is that something that you already had pre-made?
Oh no, I rustled that up this evening, Callum Elson.
No, I didn't. I
I
didn't know
also
if you
had
were
chili
working.
tonight.
Did you?
Yeah.
Little chili gang, is it? I
But
actually.
mine was a bit shit, to be honest with you. I forgot to take the lid off for the last 30 minutes and basically didn't reduce enough, so it was a bit watery.
Oh dear, that's not what
Yeah.
you want, is it?
No one
Watery
wants a
chili.
watery chili, no. But it's still
No.
going downstairs. Hopefully tomorrow it'll be better.
Yeah. Chili's always the longer the better, I find.
It's better the second day, 100% chili.
Always, yeah. Let those
Oh
flavours
dear.
marinate.
I had a
Yeah.
sweet potato curry tonight, I had.
Did you?
Oh, very nice. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah,
Was
it's a
that a
regular.
Callum Elson? Callum Elson special, or was that whipped up by the loving Alice? You're better off.
It was a 50-50 actually. Alice came through the door just as I'd started, so we kind of
Bit of a
yeah,
relay.
we did a bit of a relay on it, yeah. But yeah, I've been making that for a while. When I was at uni, that was just like a pure sustenance meal. Like I'd just make it on a Monday and just make as many batches as I could and just have them in the fridge ready to eat whenever I needed. Yeah. The other thing, boys, exciting little announcement from me, and I'm sure the listeners will appreciate it, is in preparation for this podcast, because I had 5 minutes spare as Tom was trying to eat his chili, I actually went through both of my email apps and WhatsApp, and I've managed to mute all the notifications.
Oh.
So
Oh.
all the sounds are off, so it'll just be me and my blissful voice on my end. No
No
beeping and
distractions.
distractions to come through. So yeah, don't say don't make the effort.
You say that,
Fair
but I
enough.
quite enjoyed it as a segment, to be honest. What's
If one comes
Callum's
through of note,
emails?
I'll let you know if one comes through of note.
Yeah, please do. I enjoyed that segment whilst it lasted.
Yeah, naughty little number. Anyway, boys, anyone get up to anything much this week?
I'll go first, purely because, as is going to be the case for a little while longer, I've got no running to talk about. So, I've done some squats this week,
Oh, nice
some body
progress.
weight squats. Yeah, I've done some. What else did I do? What's that exercise called where you lie on your side and you like lift your leg up like a
Yeah,
alligator's
like
mouth,
an adductor kind of thing.
something like
Yeah,
that.
yeah.
Yeah, I know what you
Something like
mean.
that. Some of them, just to get things like going again, just to get things a little bit more activated and firing, ready for 20 minutes on the bike next week.
Oof.
Yeah, so look out for that.
Hefty.
But other than that, I was busy, very busy at work at the moment, but I had a lovely day out in Bushy Park with Ellis Cross on Friday.
Oh, fresh back from his stint at altitude.
Yeah, he did 4 weeks in Font-Romeu and hit his biggest mileage weeks ever. He was doing like 90 odd miles back to back to back, where he's typically like a 65, 70, maybe up to 80 kind of guy. So he's getting ready for night of the 10Ks this Saturday, actually, at the time of recording. And he's in shape. He's in serious shape. So we met up with him, and normally at ProDirect, when we get time of athletes, it can be in like a, you've been to these events where you're just in like a room somewhere, some like poncy place in London where they've got lights hanging from the ceiling and lots of music and lots of people milling about, canopies and all the rest of it. And you might get 15 minutes with someone like Ellis to chat to them, do an interview with them, whatever. And rarely are you going to get anything decent out of that, right? Like, you boys aren't going to sit there and watch Ellis Cross talk fairly awkwardly to a camera in a dark room about his tips for 10K, right? Are you?
No, not
Probably not, no.
No.
well,
So,
I would definitely watch it. I don't know why I'm lying. I'd definitely watch it, but I'd watch it and think this could have been better, or like this is just a bit samey, you know?
So what I wanted to do is like, this was going to be one of his last sessions in the lead up to night of the 10Ks. He had just come back down from altitude. So basically just documented his session, sweat elite style, but We had Big Lewis Collins and Ed Spencer on the cameras.
Oh, the big guns.
Yeah, it's going to look pretty sexy, I think. Got the electric bikes out around Bushy Park. And he was giving it some on this session. It was only like 30 minutes of threshold, some 2 minute reps up to like a 5 minute rep and then back down. It's like a pyramid thingy. But yeah, he was giving it some towards the end, and he's a smooth mover, Ellis Cross. So yeah, that video should be out this week. I'm excited to see that come to life, because I bloody love watching training videos. And hopefully this will be a good one to have a little look at. So that's exciting. And he's going to run well at night of the 10Ks. Barring a disaster, I think he's going to have a blinder. And he also paced Copenhagen, didn't he, at the weekend?
Yeah, 30K.
Yeah, up to 30K. So, yeah, he's in shape. It's always good fun when you meet an athlete who's like very, obviously very good, but very down to earth. Like very easy to talk to, good chat, and yeah, just a good lad overall. So that was fun.
Yeah, I think Ellis is one of the best examples of someone who is a very talented athlete and did have like a lot of success as a junior, not like crazy levels, but was like known as a very, very good junior, but is so like nonchalant about it. Of course, he's like very professional the way he goes about things, extremely hardworking, that kind of thing. But if you just met him on the street in a pair of jeans, you would not go like, oh, you're a professional athlete, just from the way that he carries himself and talks. And like, yeah, there's nothing big time about him at all. And I remember kind of the first time I properly hung out with him was at Eurocross back in whenever that was, like October time. And I just remember thinking like, what a sound bloke he is. So yeah, I'm sure that was a fun one to do. And I know you don't have full control over picking like what athletes you want to do certain things with, but I always, when I see content of Ellis to him, like on my timeline, I always think like, I bet that was a laugh to film. And they always come across so much better than maybe more talented athletes or athletes with better PBs, where it's very rigid and so like, this is the Vomero, I wear it because it supports me, you know, like that kind of style of stuff.
That's really what I'm trying to get away from entirely. Like it's nobody's fault, but stick a camera in someone's face in a uncomfortable environment and you're going to get awkward, wishy-washy content that doesn't really do anything for anyone. So yeah, it felt good at the time. So hopefully it translates into the video itself. But yeah, that was good fun. And Bushy Park is outrageous. It's whilst we were just sat in the cafe waiting for the video guys to source some electric bikes, you had Adam Clarkey walked in with Charlie Grice, Charlotte Perdue, Nick Badeau, coach of MTC, and they all just sat on the table in the cafe, had a little chat. And yeah, it's amazing how accessible some of the top athletes in the sport are when it comes to running. Like you can just be in a random cafe in a park in London, and it's like, oh, there's Charlotte Perdue. So yeah, good day that. And then just had a nice little weekend. Enjoyed the sunshine, bit of a picnic.
Lovely stuff. Any nice things in the picnic? Anything turned out?
Ooh, do you know what I'm a big fan of at the moment? I need to get the name right of these tortilla chips. I'm going to Google it. Mimosa, something like that.
Mimosa, yeah.
Whoa. They are the special ones. Yeah, I had the chipotle and lime ones. Some of them. Get a bit of hummus on the go. Yeah,
Or Manomasa. Manomasa, that's what they're called.
Those are the jobbies. Yeah, chipotle and lime. Top banana they are.
I've got a quick question related to picnic food. Okay. Why is it that carrots, when they're cut up, taste so much better than just like biting into a carrot when it's not been cut up? Same with apples.
Listen, I've got a bollocks answer for you that I once heard that I'm sure is bollocks. But I heard that when you cut up fruit, right? Imagine you're gonna cut up an apple and you leave it overnight. You know, it goes a little bit brown because of the oxidization where it interacts. Well, apparently, and this is apparently to whoever told me about 10 years ago this fact when I was a kid, is when you cut it up, some chemical that's in the fruit, the sugar essentially, like interacts with the oxygen and then it tastes sweeter. Now I know for people out there that is probably complete bollocks, but like if you say that to someone with enough conviction, they'll believe it, I reckon. So hence why I'm now telling people that's the fact that it tastes better when it's cut up. I think it's just less hassle and you just put it in your mouth and that's why it's nicer. But
No, you're dead right. I've just Googled it. Why does carrot taste better when it's cut? And it's something to do with the enzymes reactions with the
increased with the surface area.
Yeah. Wow.
There you go.
Oh,
there you go.
Cut your vegetables, everybody.
I think it's hard to beat, actually, carrots and hummus at a picnic. Mm-hmm.
But I'll say something to you there. Now, a carrot, if you were to cut a carrot as if it's like circular shape, I don't think that's tasting as nice as a baton.
No, carrot.
It's got to be
sticks, don't you?
So even though they're cut up, it's also about how you cut it, I think, as well.
Yeah, and they've got to be, I find, I don't know about you boys, but I find that they have to be lightly refrigerated as well. They've got to be pretty cold. They've got to be crisp. They've got to snap when you bite into them, right? You can't have a carrot that's been left in the sun all day because it will be a bit soft and floppy and flaccid. You don't want a flaccid carrot. You want a nice, crisp, cold, crunchy one, don't you?
That sounds
good.
The thing is, in the cooler with the ice box.
Yeah, I just find cool bags just frustrating item, you know, because you need it up until lunch. And then once lunch is consumed, you don't need it anymore. So why, you don't want to be lugging it around. Honestly, I'd just sacrifice the carrots.
You got to be strategic. You can either, right, you can either park somewhere close to the picnic location, in which case you can carry your cooling box to the venue, have your little picnic, pack everything up and then stick it in the boot of the car and go home again. Or you need a good supermarket close to the venue of your picnic. So this was Ponsey. This was in Holland Park, right? Which is like, I don't know exactly. I think it's like Kensington, Chelsea type area. And obviously there was a Waitrose across the road. So if you went there, you could have got, they'd probably cut them up for you if you asked nicely enough. But you probably could have got sliced and diced, refrigerated carrots ready to rock and roll. That's what you want, right? I mean, it pays for convenience sometimes, doesn't it? So those are your two options, I think, really, when it comes to the perfect picnic carrot.
There we go. I'm glad we settled that one.
Yeah, anyway, that was my week.
Sounds good, mate. Sounds good. And just in a very brief summary, you're doing your exercises and what you cycle next week, and then how many weeks of cross training before you run?
How many weeks before cross train until I run, I don't know, but I'll do 2 to 3 weeks of like light cross training before upping the intensity a bit more, and then doing some heavier strength and conditioning stuff twice a week with like compound lifts and whatnot. So just taking it week by week, to be honest, at the moment, rather than thinking, oh, in 8 weeks I might be able to run, because I might not be able to, or I might be able to sooner. So yeah, taking it as it comes in a minute.
Good stuff. Nice little week to say you didn't talk about any running. I feel like you fleshed that out nicely.
Yeah, with carrots, apparently. Yeah. Don't know we care so much about carrots.
No, yeah. It is interesting though. Ben raised a good point about the cutting up.
Yeah, I do. I never knew the answer, and now I do. And I reckon there's a lot of listeners out there that are in the same boat. So,
final question before we do Ben's week of running: if you make a sandwich, how are you cutting that sandwich, lads? Are you going like in a triangle, or are you going in a?
Usually triangle, but if it's a fish finger sandwich, I go straight down the middle.
Just for fish fingers.
Yeah.
Not just
fish fingers. Is that a regular sandwich you're eating?
Well, I had a fish finger sandwich last night, probably the first one in months, but that was cut straight down the middle.
Right, okay. But all of the sandwiches you're going
diagonal,
corner to corner?
Yeah, I think so.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think that translates as well to like sausage sandwiches. I think if you're having like a proper British like butty, right, you cut it straight down the middle, you're not precious about it, there's ketchup and shit flying everywhere and you don't care. But if you're going to effort with your sandwich, right, you're making a nice, you know, a nice gourmet sandwich, then it's got to be triangles, it's got to be a diagonal slice every time, in my opinion.
Just the one though. I ain't cutting that into four. That's too much.
No. Just the one. Yeah. What about you, Callum?
I really enjoy a diagonally cut sandwich, a triangle, but I never actually do that myself. I also pilot just straight down the middle, just cut it onto, you know, and then move on to whatever else is happening. I've never really thought about it.
Well, you not thought about it, but you thought to ask the question on the podcast, so that's interesting.
Yeah, I did. I think the problem is often when I'm making a sandwich, boys, I don't actually make it. The assembly point for me is on the plate rather than on the chopping board. And then you know what it's like when you're cutting on a plate. You're a bit hesitant about how hard to go through because you don't want it to have that horrible scratching knife on ceramic noise. So it's easy just to kind of dabble it through the middle than it is to go for an elegant one big one slam corner to corner diagonal chop.
I wonder if there's any science towards the release of enzymes and the way that you cut your sandwiches as well.
Or whether that's no.
Someone has written about it. That's for sure.
Yeah. Mm. Who knows? Anyway, Ben, do you fancy talking about some running?
Yeah, I'll go for it, mate. So my week of running started with a 70-minute easy run on Monday. 15.67 kilometers at 4:28. Can't really remember anything about that run. Nothing to note. And then, yeah, much the same in the evening. 40 minutes easy run again. This one, I actually didn't know which way to run out of the house, so I asked Meg, left or right, and she said right, and then I said left or right, and she said left, and then she said and then I asked her again, and she said right, and so basically that dictated the route that I was going to run.
When you say you didn't know which way to run, you did know a way to run, but just you couldn't make up your mind of which way.
Yeah, you know when you just leave the house and you've basically done all the routes from your house, you know them all off by heart, and you're just like, I'm not bothered which one I do. So yeah, let Meg decide. Nice. She had no idea what I was talking about, but yeah, it worked out quite well because I got back to the house and it was about 40 minutes, and that's what I wanted to do. So happy days. Then on to Tuesday, which was my first harder session day of the week. You're going to hate this, boys, but I did a threshold in the morning, 30 minutes continuous on the treadmill. And then in the evening, I had no intention of going back to the gym to do another threshold session, but I was about to head to the track, and then there was a thunderstorm in our area, and there was a yellow weather warning, blah, blah, blah. And the track basically is used by a lot of younger children. So they basically said track's cancelled tonight. So that left me with either go outside in the rain and try and do some more faster running that I had planned, or again, head to the gym. So I jumped on the treadmill, got another 30 minutes done. All in all, pretty good day of training, but yeah, wouldn't recommend doing two treadmill runs in the same day. That was a bit tragic, but good bit of training.
Yeah, it looks, I'm just looking at the image you attached for your warm down in the morning. It looks like a nice little area where you've got to run, actually.
Yeah,
is that near the gym?
Yeah, that's from the gym. So that's in the Maldon area, the River Blackwater.
Looks lovely. But that's where I do
my park runs as well.
I mean, brutal treadmill, but if the conditions were anything like they were here on Tuesday night, then probably a correct decision because it was terrible in Cambridge. So I'm sure it was similar near you.
Yeah, I secretly enjoyed it quite a lot, actually. But I don't think I'd be doing two treadmill runs in the same day again, just because, yeah, a lot of people said it was a psychotic behaviour. And I kind of have to agree, but probably hence why I enjoyed it. move on to my Wednesday run. A recovery run at 5 minutes per kilometer pace. I'm getting a little bit of feedback on my. I don't know about you guys. Can you hear?
I can hear you loud and clear, mate.
No echo.
Oh, I can hear a little bit afterwards. I can hear my own voice just after I speak.
Yeah, I wonder if someone's got audio a bit too loud. Anyway, I'll carry on. Hopefully, that doesn't bother too many people. Just a recovery run Wednesday, 16 kilometers, and then a core session in the evening. And then on Thursday, my second sort of harder day of the week, I did a 30-minute progression run in the morning, starting at an easy pace and then working down to around half marathon pace. Feels good just to get the legs spinning, but doesn't build up as much fatigue as something like a threshold session or a workout in the morning. And that was because I had a bit of a faster session to do with Luke in the evening.
And a quick question, Ben, for the progression. Chris Pacey on your Strava has asked, "Hi, Ben, doing Stockholm Marathon in a few weeks, and you mentioned on the podcast a few times that you used to live there. Best bar for a celebratory post-marathon drink. Keep up the great work. Have you got any bar recommendations in Stockholm?"
Yeah, I didn't see that question. Sorry, Chris. There's a couple of good ones on Gamlestan. They're a bit more expensive. Or if you want to go a little bit more sort of indie quirky, there's some good ones on Sodomarm. I'll drop you a reply on that Strava comment in a minute, Chris, and give you some recommendations.
Nice one. And Chris, if you want to DM me, I'll give you my PayPal for asking that question. Just like my little PA fee for Ben there.
Agency fee.
Yeah. I should get someone to read these comments for me, and then that could be there. You could earn a little bit of money. I'll give you a quid for every Strava comment you reply to. I'd probably get out of pocket quite quickly.
Don't get too big time, Ben.
Yeah, no, that doesn't sound like a good idea.
Also, on Friday, May the 11th, your employee would have made £2.
Yeah, that's hefty.
So I'm not sure that's sustainable practice.
I think a pound's too much, to be fair. I'll give you 20p.
Right, anyway, crack on.
On to Thursday evening. So I did, I was basically going to jump in with Luke and do his session, and he had some 200 meters, 200 meter reps. So I did 2 by 1 kilometer at around 5k, 10k pace, and then 5 by 200 with Luke, and then 2 by 1 kilometer to finish. So it was a bit of a like sandwich workout. But yeah, I think not having done any speed work in a fairly long period of time, doing 200 meters at pretty much max effort was probably one of the stupidest things I've done in a little while. But anyway, I averaged 2:58s for the K reps. They felt surprisingly comfortable. And then, yeah, 27 seconds average for the 200 meter reps, which were pretty much flat out for me. And then ever since, my hamstrings have been pretty tight. So, yeah, it wasn't the smartest thing to be doing.
Well, you live and you learn, don't you?
Yeah. I thought, you know, it's only 200 meters. I can do a couple of reps with Luke. That won't do any damage. But yeah, little did I know that basically for the last 3 or 4 days post that session, I've had like mildly strained hamstrings. So that's been fun.
What Not did you wear bad. For them?
I was wearing Vaporflies.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Vaporfly 3s. But I think, yeah, they're not really going to make much difference for 200 reps. I probably should have been in flats or spikes, really. And then, yeah, we had a lovely little Wagamamas after that. Just spontaneously after the track, we decided to head down to the local one. So, yeah, that was that. The next day, Friday, I had planned to do a tempo session, again, with one of my teammates, Seb. He has Friday mornings off work, so this is maybe going to become a bit of a regular thing. And he just wanted some company for his tempo session. So it's another case of me jumping in with somebody else. But yeah, really enjoyed that one. We did sort of a 3 mile, 2 mile, 1 mile, all at around sort of my marathon pace. So not too much effort for me, I would say. But as Seb's coming back from quite a long period of injury, he's run around 15:30 for 5K, so he's a decent runner. But at the moment, he's probably more like 16:30 shape. So, yeah, it was good to keep him company for that. We went down to a local airfield actually for this one. I'm not sure what the name of it is, but it's in Earls Cone, and it's completely closed off to the public. And yeah, this is as close to perfect running conditions and routes you're going to find in the Essex area. I think it's a bit of a hidden secret. So if you're in the area, maybe give it a go. But you do have to wear high vis because it's on a private industrial estate. So there's there's a few lorries like driving around. So yeah, the one condition is there's a sign that says runners are welcome, but you've got to wear something high vis. So just like a bright t-shirt is fine.
That's like unbelievable.
That. Yeah, this looks like a nice little loop.
Looks like honestly, a bloody Bermuda Triangle, doesn't it? Bermuda Triangle from this little thing.
The only issue was it was a little bit windy. So for two of the sides of the triangle, it was, yeah, quite blustery. But for tempo work, that made it quite honest, I think.
And what are you doing there, like 5:30s? Something like that?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, around 5:30s, maybe 5:40s per mile. Nice.
Solid.
That was a total of 19 kilometers at 4 minutes per kilometer pace. Saturday, I did a bit of park run pacing for my little sister. She's currently training for the Hackney Half Marathon, which is this weekend. And this was her sort of B goal race in her training plan. And yeah, it went really well for her. She wanted to try and run as close to 25 minutes as possible. Her previous PB was 25:50, and I think we ran 25:20, and I got Charlie, housemate, to help with pacing duties, and basically me and Charlie ran round with Ellie in the sort of Kipchoge diamond formation, and yeah, she got a new PB of about 30 seconds, so she was dead chuffed.
I love that. How is she enjoying her running at the moment?
Yeah, she's really getting into it. I basically sat down with her one afternoon and wrote a sort of training plan of how to approach Hackney Half. And she's been doing interval training, long runs, recovery runs, a lot. So, yeah, I think she's really enjoying it. And the results are showing there. Almost a 40-second PB at Park Run is a good sign.
Very wholesome. that is, especially the picture.
Yeah.
Mum, sister, flatmate, dog, four.
Yeah, it was good. Mum didn't have a great run. I think she was about 2 minutes off her PB, but she was just happy to get round. She didn't stop. She never stops, my mum. She did it in about 34 minutes, I think. So, yeah, credit to her for getting around as well.
What's your mum's name, Ben?
Well done, mum.
Jane. Jane Felton.
Well done, Jane.
Good stuff, Jane. We all have those days.
Yeah, but she got around listening to Radio 2.
bloody hell, Jane.
Yeah, she should be reading it.
If she put Radio 1 on, you'll get a 10-minute PB.
Yeah, it's probably why she doddles around. She's just too into the radio.
What do they talk about? Is it BBC Radio 2 where they talk about, like...
Radio 2 is literally designed to put you to sleep the way they speak, I'm pretty sure. Like, legally, they have to be like, welcome to Radio 2 Drive Time, and you're supposed to just sleep.
Next up, the price of the Daily Mail has risen by 0.2p in the last 6 months. That's
0.2p. Yeah. Right, okay. Right.
Yeah, that's big news on Radio 2.
Yeah, huge. You'll have people writing in left, right, and centre. Anyway, Sunday.
Yeah, finish off the week. I had a 20 miler, and I also wanted to watch the Copenhagen Marathon. So, killed two birds with one stone, jumped on the trusty treadmill, and watched pretty much the entire marathon, which was really nice considering nobody was about to do a Sunday long run. That was a good alternative. So I did 32 kilometers at 3:33 per kilometer pace.
Ben, question: you did six sessions this week. What are your thoughts?
Six sessions. No,
you did six. I just counted because I was confused when I saw 20 mile tempo. Like, I'm counting. That's definitely a session. You're not getting away with that.
That's a session.
So you've done the 20 mile tempo. That's session one. Then you've got this airfield thing that's gone on, which is two.
That's a tempo. They're then two tempos.
Session. Then you've got the hamstring snapper. That's three. Then you've got 30-minute progression that's got no map or anything, and you've tried
to hide it.
You've tried to make it look like a normal run. That's four. And then you've got threshold, the three times, the day where you went twice to the
treadmill.
Double
threshold day.
That's five and six.
Yeah, fair enough. I'm getting in shape, mate.
Six sessions.
Some people be happy to run six times a week. You've done fucking six sessions.
I think you're just bored. You're just bored. And you're just like, oh, sod it. Like, what's going to make the run go quicker? I'll just make it a tempo. Oh, no one's. This lad's about on a Friday, so I'll just go to the airfield and just do some 5:30s.
Yeah.
I like that. Six sessions. It's a great week of training in terms of, like, if you're feeling good and everything. But maybe not sustainable to do six every week. So hopefully this week it's back down to its regular levels.
I will say on that note, if I do tempo work, like I'm the next day I'm not really feeling the session, if that makes sense. Whereas if I do hard track stuff, then it wrecks me. But I could probably do tempo every day of the week. And
you couldn't. That's the thing. Otherwise, they would do it. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
I know. It sounds stupid, but like if it was. And maybe they are doing it, we don't know. But like a classic Ingebrigtsen thing, or all these athletes that are way better than us that are like pushing the boundaries, if you could just run at 5:30s all the time, you just would, because I think you'd get the best physiological benefit from it, if you know what I mean. But over time, I think you wouldn't. There's, for whatever scientific reason, you have to get the low heart rate stuff in as well, which obviously you have. You've run nearly 100 miles that week. Just a thing to note for the listeners. Just because you feel good, you know, you
want to
feel
good. Doesn't mean you do six sessions a week.
Yeah, you want to feel good for 9 months of the year, you know, rather than just be smashing it out while you can. But as we know, Ben, you are a slight anomaly in this situation.
Mm. Yeah, don't take too much advice from my weeks of running. Let's just put it my way, put it that way. Good week. 150 kilometers. A couple of gym sessions.
When are you racing then now?
So as recording, I'm racing on Saturday. First 3,000 meters.
You got a race. Okay, nice.
Yeah, but it's not going to be. I'm not going to taper in for this one. This is going to be another week of pretty high training load, because I've got some bigger races coming in than maybe two or three months. So I'm keen to just get a good block in at the moment.
Yeah, that's probably good that you did that session where you did the 3 minute kilometers, the 2:58s and the 200s then, because that's probably what you're going to need to run there or thereabouts, isn't it? They're normally in and around nine minutes. The 3,000s.
To be honest with you, and moving forward, I'm going to start doing less tempo work and more track stuff like that. Try and move towards more like two proper hard track sessions a week and maybe one tempo. And that'll get some speed going in the legs, hopefully.
Yeah, traditional. Good stuff, mate. Great week.
Thank you, mate.
I need to navigate away from your week onto my week. Give me a moment.
No worries.
But yeah, so you've got 3,000. Where is that? Is that local?
Yeah, just a local Colchester. It's in the Southern Athletics League. So okay. Yeah, they're one of those races which can be either fairly competitive or you can have nobody turn up at all and you've got to just run seven and a half laps on your own.
That could be a whole episode in itself, but that's the problem with the National Athletics League and the Southern and the regional ones as well. Mm. It's like, you know, you'd think the National Athletics League would be like a premium fixture for in the UK. Like that sounds like it's the Premier League of running, but actually I've never been to it. Don't know how it works.
Yeah.
It's just kind of like, oh, we need someone for the 4x4. You just stick someone in kind of thing. Yeah, exactly. It's very grassroots. Which is a shame that there's not more, you know, top people that go. But
yeah,
it'll be good to race one.
Are you going straight from your 3K tonight, the 10Ks?
I am indeed.
Yeah.
My race is at 2:30 and then jump on the train at about 3 and come down to celebrate the night of the 10,000s.
What a blockbuster day of track festivities that's going to be for you, eh?
Yeah, it'll be good. All filmed for YouTube, of course.
Shall I fly through my week and then we can do a little preview of Night of the 10Ks?
Yes, mate. Go for
in
it.
In a little section. Cool. So Monday morning, I had 7.7 miles at 7:10s, about 55 minutes, and wasn't feeling terrible for this run, to be honest. I've put here the shits are downgraded to a 6 out of 10 because I'd had a bit of an upset stomach on the Sunday after the long run, but I woke up and I wasn't feeling terrible. So I thought, all right, business as usual, like it's not enough to stop me training. Cool. So that's my Monday morning run. Doubled up in the evening, 3.14 miles at 8:19 per mile. Ran this with Alice, actually, my girlfriend. So just 25 minutes, pretty easy jogging.
Is she training for triathlon by any chance?
She's not training for triathlon, but
bike in the morning, run in the evening.
I know. She's just very supportive and just is obsessed with fresh air and going outside and doing that sort of stuff. She just any excuse to go out. So yeah, she kindly joined me on the bike in the morning. Was this a bank holiday by any chance? I think it was, wasn't it?
I've lost count of them, to be honest.
It was the coronation one, I think. Mm-hmm. This one.
Yeah.
Because the one before it was May Day. So this one was, yeah. So hence why Alice joined me for that, because she had the day off work. So yeah, that was a nice little double on the Monday.
Have you seen the comments for that one, mate? Darren Tubby says 3 minutes shit in a hedge? ?
Yeah, because I'll leave the elapsed time to your imagination.
Okay.
The elapsed time, it's not 3 minutes. I did have to stop in a bush and pull my shorts down just to see if I could shit. I didn't actually like shit, luckily enough, on this run. I was reasonably close to home, so I could get back. But yeah, that's why partly the elapsed time is high, but also crossing roads and all that kind of stuff. I didn't spend 3 minutes there. That would be a serious bottom issue, I believe, if it was that long. And anyway, Monday is where the weeks took a turn. In the evening, I really started to feel unwell. I don't know if I've had food poisoning or just like a stomach bug that's kind of been pretty severe. I don't know. But I went from feeling a little bit kind of down at the weekend, nothing crazy, to suddenly like Monday night just hit me like a train pretty much. And I started to feel really unwell, kind of like sore throat, fatigued, just not good. And that night when I went to bed, I just, you know, when you go to bed and you're a normal temperature and at one point you just wake up in the night and you're just really cold, just like freezing. I was
the worst. Yeah.
Freezing cold. So then obviously you put loads of layers on and then you start sweating so much and then you're just like a really disrupted night's sleep. So I woke up on the Tuesday and was like, yeah, I actually feel like really ill. And I've kind of joked about it on Instagram and throughout the week that like I've had the shits and people just call it the shits. And obviously I did have extremely bad diarrhea, but but more to the point, I felt absolutely terrible. Like it's the worst I've ever felt in. I know I come across as such a drama queen on this podcast, and I am. And anyone that knows me will be like, oh yeah, I'm sure you felt really bad. But it's genuinely the most ill I've ever been. Just totally wiped out for 3 days. Was barely going on my laptop and like doing my actual emails. I was genuinely, you know, kind of, you know, wiped out ill. So Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, I didn't do any running at all. I barely moved from my room, to be honest. And the problem was just that I couldn't eat anything, couldn't keep anything down. So I was kind of having like a banana and expecting myself to get better. And it's like, well, you're not giving your body any fuel to repair itself if all you're going to have is some sips of water and a banana on a whole Wednesday compared to me who normally eats, you know, like a real big amount of food. So yeah, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday was a write off from running.
There's been something going around, I think, Callum, because it's I've heard lots of people who've had very similar experiences to you, just totally wiped out, pissing out their asses and all the rest of it. Summer's nursery had to like close because there were too many kids who were exploding all over the place. And
that's
then teachers
good.
And parents and stuff as well. So I think there's just been a gross tummy bug virus type thing going around.
Yeah, and it's frustrating. I know it's like so petty of me to say, Tom, because you've had so long off running. But you know when something just disrupts your momentum, like I'm such a big consistency person. Mm. I do everything I need to do. I just tick it off one day at a time, one item or double or gym or whatever it is at a time. And I've had such a really good build-up of all this consistency, a really good season opener, you know, being excited for this Germany race that I've got coming up this week for a while. And it was kind of like a spanner in the works of like, oh, shit, like, you know. I mean, now in hindsight, all I've missed is one session and a couple of days of easy running. Like, that's really not the end of the world. But when you're kind of in your feels a little bit because you're a bit fatigued and you're feeling sorry for yourself, it is, or I find anyway, easy to kind of convince yourself the world's ended, you're never going to run again, and that, you know, life's not fair. But once I got some carbs back into me on Thursday night and, you know, managed to actually get some energy, I realized, yeah, you're actually gonna be fine. So on Friday, I decided to go for a run again and ran on Friday morning, did 3 miles at 7:23s, so just 25 minutes. And that was mainly just to kind of see how I felt. And I was really gonna just do that run. And if I felt like mediocre, kind of don't want to push through an illness and make myself worse, I've already had 3 days off, like four's not gonna make any difference. But I actually felt, you know, surprisingly good. Again, I think it's was literally my body just finally getting some food and soaking it up and being like, ah, oh, this is what it feels like to, you know, operate off something that's not your like fat stores, basically. Mm. So I felt so good that I ended up doing my double as planned. So I went out in the afternoon and did 6.43 miles at 6:51s. So yeah, it was a promising Friday. So I decided to do my session on the Saturday, which coincided perfectly actually, because the uni had a massive group down doing some sessions. And Tom Keane was back down from uni. We had a really good group, basically, albeit doing a different session from me, but just good to have some company at the track. And after discussing with Nick about how I felt, he still kind of wanted me to go ahead with the session as planned because I've got a race coming up the weekend, like this weekend as of recording. He still felt it was important that I tried to get this session in. So this was a pretty hard lactic session. I had 5 sets of 400, 60 seconds rest, 200, and then 2.5 minutes between the sets. And that 60 seconds was a 200 meter jog. So those were started at 59 and 29 and then cut it down to kind of 57, 27-ish. And then the last rep just started to get a little bit slower as the lactate was kind of building up. But that was pretty solid session. Not ideal conditions, kind of by myself. And obviously being ill and a bit fatigued that week. So at the time I didn't take loads of confidence from it, and I wasn't kind of didn't leave the session like I normally do where I'm buzzing. I'm like, okay, yeah, another step forward. I was a bit like, it's all right. Like, it's not great. But now I'm looking back on it, it's like, actually it's, you know, pretty solid. I wouldn't have done that much differently in perfect conditions. So yeah, that was a nice little session on Friday afternoon.
Spiked up for that one or?
Yeah, had spikes on for that, and yeah, my calves were wrecked the next day. Sunday, actually, kind of almost even into today, my calves really took a beating from just running at that faster pace in spikes. But it was important to get the quality of work in, so if I need it, and to kind of simulate what that's going to be like in a race. So they're starting to feel a little bit better now. But yeah, that was a pretty tough session, that one. And these sessions, this similar to one I did a couple of, I don't know if it's last episodes when I did that, the 800, 300. These sessions, Nick described as me, he said, like, I would consider these sessions like hard, but you should be able to complete them. And when Nick says that, I know that it's like, I'm gonna feel like it's hard, if you know what I mean. That's his way of basically saying, expect this to feel like it's tough. You just got to power through and get it done, sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So when it was hard, I was like, okay, I know this is what training effect I'm supposed to be getting from this anyway. So yeah, that was track session Saturday. I doubled in the evening just with a little shakeout, just 3 miles at 7:16s. And then that only left Sunday, where I had 13 miles at 6:34. So what's that? An hour and 25 minutes. Picked it up last couple of miles, but just kept it easy because I'd had the session the day before. And yeah, that rounded out a pretty good week, to be fair. To say I had 3 days off ill, still did 40, just short of 45 miles. So it's basically what, like just over 10 miles a day on the days that I actually did run. And yeah, ended on a positive note, which is good. And today I've, you know, had my double in gym, been to physio, and I've kind of parked what happened, got over the fact that the momentum's kind of dipped a little bit, and recognized it could be a million times worse. And now I'm on the up and I'm excited for a race this weekend. So yeah, a week of two tails, two sides. I don't know what that quote is. Half good, half shit, literally.
And what's the race you've got coming up this weekend?
The name of it I can't actually remember, but it's in Karlsruhe, which is like an hour from outside Frankfurt. It's a 1500 meters. It's one of the World Continental Tour series. So I'm racing in the 1500 meter B race at around 8 p.m. ish on Saturday night. And then I'm coming back an hour or so later to pace the 5,000 meter A race. I'm going to pace a mile of that or 1,600 meters of that. And they're trying to run about 13:20, I think, something like that, 13:20, 13:25. And my race will be paced for 3:37, I believe. So, yeah, it's a great field. Like the fact I'm in the B race and it's being paced for 3:37 shows you how crazy the A race is that's being paced for 3:34. There's Manango is in that, who is like one of the only guys in the world to have run 3:28. He did get done for doping, I think, at some point, but we'll let that slide.
Brush that under the rug. Don't need
yeah.
to
yeah.
He's
yeah.
done it.
Oh, here we go. I've got the meet up here. It's called Langlaufnacht. Langlaufnacht. I'm going to Google. I'm going to translate this so you can read
it out.
I've
got it. Langlaufnacht.
Langlaufnacht Karlsruhe. Yep.
Yeah,
there you go.
I've got it.
Rolls right off the tongue, that one does, doesn't it?
Yeah. But yeah, should be a good meet. Charlie's flying out with me and staying for the weekend. So should get some good content for another kind of YouTube series episode.
Nice.
And yeah, exciting stuff. I just want to get one ticked off. Get some momentum going. I'm racing the week after that as well in Manchester. I'm racing a mile. So yeah, two in 2 weeks, which will be good to get on the track, get my racing brain kind of going and just get out there and race. Doing the first 1500 has been what all this has been building up to do, and I just want to get it done. I don't care whether it's bang on pace or it's 10 seconds too slow. I just want to get out there and get it done because I need to get on the horse and get rolling.
Sounds good, mate. How do you feel about racing as frequently as you are? Is it
No, I don't think I am racing very frequently compared to like what a lot of the middle distance guys will do, especially as the summer starts to pick up. You'll see like a lot of the guys from the US will come over or even Brits will go to Europe and they'll do like a Wednesday in Belgium, a Saturday in France, and then the following Tuesday in Switzerland or whatever it is. And they'll do like three or four races within a week or 2 weeks, because once you've done the hard training, that's what you need to recover from. Recovering from a race is pretty easy. Like to bounce back from doing an all out 1500 is not that hard. That's why you can see a lot of guys doing workouts straight after they do the race, because it's not that taxing on your body. It's a very, of course it's demanding, but it's for a short period of time, and it's about maintaining like an optimal speed for a short period of time. You're not going into the well where you're like having to think about fueling or like getting into your carb reserves or like you would in a marathon where it can really actually beat up your body. So yeah,
your body's not depleted after a 1500 so much that you have to take 3 days off.
Exactly that. So yeah, so I'm racing kind of 2 weeks on the bounce, then I've got a week off, and then I've got another race. So it's like three races in 4 weeks, which if they were like a road 10K or something, I would definitely be like against doing that. But because they're 1500 meters and miles, I think there's a lot to say for momentum when it's racing on the track. Like in my head, it's like, okay, this Saturday, maybe I'll be on pace and it'll be all perfect until a kilometer. And then maybe it'll get a little bit hard and I'll fall off the pace and something might happen. Let's say that's the case. Then going into the next race, it's okay, can I make sure it's all right until 1200 this time rather than a kilometer? And then eventually you have to race enough and fire enough like whatever the Michael Jordan quote is, whatever, you got to take enough shots that one of them's gonna, you know, land. You got to buy enough tickets to finally win the lottery. I think that is a big thing. Like, you see so many guys who, like George Mills is a great example. He just ran for a year, like 336, 336, 336, every single race, and then finally got a breakthrough and went, boom, finally got his 335. And if he'd stopped racing and sort of practicing and waiting for that one kind of day, he wouldn't have got it. So, yeah, I think you have to race a fair amount to have a shot at it.
It's interesting. And main reason I ask is I know people, probably myself included, can get in your own head about racing and how each time you race, it has to be perfect. Like, if you're not racing to run a PB or whatever, then it's not worth doing, and you can lump the pressure on. But like what you've just spoken about from your standpoint and what George Mills done is, it's good to hear. Like, you don't have to be perfect every time. You just need one of those races to go perfectly, and you're more likely to have a perfect race if you do more of them, right?
Yeah, yes and no. Like, obviously you want to build up as much as you can, and a lot of the top class guys will just shut themselves away. And so, for example, Louise, who's an Irish girl in our training group here in Cambridge, she just ran 159.5 at the Belfast Irish Milers meet this weekend gone, which gets her an automatic qualifying spot for the World Championships in Ireland, for Ireland, sorry. So I don't want to speak on her behalf, but I'm guessing now she'll just shut up shop. There's no need to race again. And she can just get ready for that heat that she's got to do, heat, semi and final at the World Champs. And she doesn't need to focus on racing. She's a great racer. She doesn't need to like hone her craft. She can just get fit and get ready for it now. Whereas if you're not at that very top world-class level, then your goals are very different. And unless you're kind of willing to, if you care enough about a British champs or something to go, right, I'm going to shut myself away and just get ready for the 8th of July, then really you're operating for a time goal. And if you're in order to get a time goal, it's a very dangerous game to just put all your hopes on one spot and be like, this is going to be the day that I do it. Because there's so many variables like the weather, like the field, like all these other things that can get in the way. Plus you have the added pressure on yourself of being like, oh shit, this is the thing I've worked all this time for. I've told everyone I'm going to do this. Like, you know, I've told people I want to run under 340. If I don't do it this weekend, is it the end of the world? No. All right, I'll do it another time. You know, like, that's the mindset I have to have. Otherwise, I'm going to be shitting myself on the start line going, oh my God, imagine when I have to make this Instagram post to say I ran 343 and I didn't get my goal. Like, everyone's going to think I'm such a failure. It's like, all right, well, how many people are going to comment that could actually even run 343? Nobody. So cool. You know, that's the mindset I think I have to have personally, to be able to like deal with that sort of putting yourself out there on the internet. Ben, I know, both of you put your things out there for what you're doing. I'm sure you have similar but slightly different like coping mechanisms of what you're going to do, because I think people would be lying if they said they didn't have those thoughts in their head where they're like, oh, I've said, Ben, you must get this especially. Like, you're putting out like a 12 video series building up for one specific time goal. You must be thinking like, okay, this goes two ways. I get the goal and this is the content that comes out, or I don't get the goal and this is the content that comes out. And you just have to accept that they're both a possibility and crack on with it.
Yeah, you know, definitely.
I think if you just have in your head like, no, it's not a possibility that I can't get this goal, like I must achieve it, then you'd be an idiot and your career wouldn't go anywhere because you'd be in such a bad mental place the whole time, because you'd just be, you know, in a cycle. So, yeah, sorry, that was a tangent from racing a lot, but that was just unpacking my brain slightly for 5 minutes.
No, you unpack away, Callum. I love it. Callum's little words of wisdom always go down a treat in my ears anyway.
Yeah,
so jump into some running news.
Yeah, crack on, mate.
Should we talk a little bit about the night of the 10,000s? Do a bit of a preview. We've already touched on it a little bit.
Yeah, definitely.
I think so.
So, Callum, you want to take the lead on this one?
Yeah, so it's really simple from me, to be honest. Like, if you're like a real big running enthusiast that knows all the details, apologies because I'm going to get some stuff wrong here, and I don't know all the individuals that are racing and all that kind of thing. But the summary for you, if you're a part-timer like me, is this. The women's race is going to be really good on paper, should be really good. Pretty much every big British name, apart from Ailish McColgan, is there in the domestic lineup. You have, like, so many people. You've got people like Sam Harrison that's just done London Marathon and you don't really know how she's going to be. You've got people like Eloise Markov that's not run a 10K for ages, but is an amazingly talented runner. Then you've got people that are proven over the distance like Callie Thackeray, etc., Jess Judd. So the women's race from a British perspective should be really good. And this is obviously the UK championships. So they're all going for a medal. at the UK, that kind of thing. Problem arises here. The time for the women is 30 minutes and 40 seconds, I believe, to get the world qualifying. Now, a few of them, they'll be looking at that like it's definitely, like they're definitely capable of getting it. Some of them will be like, actually, that's a bit unrealistic, but still want to be involved in the race. So that's where it's going to come down to kind of being like, okay, I wonder how the race is going to play out. Are they just going to race each other? Are they going to go for the time? All that kind of thing. But I think the women's race will be really good for that reason. Mix in a few internationals. Great. The men's race, and boys, I don't know what your thoughts about on this. The qualifying time is 27 minutes and 10 seconds. So like with respect to all the British runners, apart from Andy Butchart, but you know, not that he's going to listen to this. I don't know if he's got it in his locker. Like that's a serious time to get. And his PB is 27:36. So even if he runs out of his mind and gets a PB, he still needs a lot to get the time. Like none of the British runners are anywhere close to that time. There's no like Mark Scott or Sam Atkin or Mo Farah or anyone that could even get close to it. So how good that race is going to be, I don't know, because obviously, again, they're all competing for a British title and things like that. But I just would hate to see a situation where you've got the top international runners lapping the person who could be winning the British title. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
It might take away from it a little bit. You kind of want a British guy up there for everyone to be screaming for and be like, come on, you know, he's going to do it kind of thing. So yeah, how that plays out and for you guys spectating, I think will be interesting because there's an unrealistic chance of them getting the qualifying time, which is what made it exciting last year. Cause it was like, oh, Cripper, Emil, like they could get the time. This is going to be really exciting. But yeah, it'll all be to do with how they race it. So people like Ellis Cross would love a British title, I'm sure. He's not going to run 27:10. You know, if he does, he's been taking some crazy shit in front of him.
Yeah, you're dead right. Like, I think Ellis wanted a PB, but you're talking, he said he'd be delighted to run 28:20. So, you know, like, puts it into perspective a little bit how outrageous that qualifying time is on the men's side, right? Yeah, it's an interesting one.
Yeah,
but at the same time, it's impressive that, like, a pretty low-key event. Well, it's not low-key anymore because it's one of the biggest events in the UK calendar, but it's amazing that the event has grown to the size now where we can attract runners from all over the world that are capable of running 27 minutes for a 10K to put on a spectacle for us down in London. So yeah, I can't wait to go down and watch. Racing myself, but yeah, look forward to making some content. I think, Tom, you'll be pretty much in the same boat yourself, won't you?
Yeah, we're actually, you mentioned Amy Eloise Markovic. We're hopefully shooting a little documentary piece with her on the Friday beforehand, just a little interview and talk about what she's been up to, how her training's been going. She's had some injury and illness and stuff recently. And she's one who's definitely going for the world's time. She's taking it very seriously. So, yeah, hopefully that goes well and it'll be exciting.
She runs for On, doesn't she?
She does indeed. Yeah, that's the reason why we're doing it with her. So for those who don't know, On last year they had a pretty big investment in Night of the 10Ks, but they weren't like the sole sponsor of it. Whereas now they've totally taken the helm with like the whole On Track Nights thing, and Night of the 10Ks has just become one of those series. So they've put a huge amount of time, effort, money into it. And as such, they're going to have a solid representation of athletes there. It's exciting. It should be, aside from qualifying times and the nuances of that kind of stuff, it should just be a bloody good evening, to be honest. The right old tear up of track racing. Like the atmosphere should be, if the weather's good, which at the moment it's looking like it's going to be, it should be special. And I don't think there's really anywhere that you could be that would be better, that could top it, like atmosphere wise, other than like London Marathon or Boston Marathon. Obviously, I don't think there's much that really beats Night of the 10Ks.
Apart from Callum's race
in the
middle of nowhere in Germany. Yeah. If he runs under 3:40, we'll be talking about that a lot more than the Night of 10,000.
Well, what will be interesting is to see where there is more world qualifiers at my race or at the Night of the 10Ks. We'll look at that next week because I reckon it could be similar.
Mm. Interesting stuff. Right. In other running news, we also had the Copenhagen Marathon this weekend, which was a pretty yeah, special one to watch. I am pretty much, as I said in my weekly recap, I watched the majority of it down on the treadmill. And the standout performance by far was Philly Bowden. She ran 2:29 and ended up coming in third place, which at a marathon of Copenhagen's sort of standard and level was, yeah, incredible. I don't think she would have even dreamt of getting a podium finish at somewhere like Copenhagen, and to run a 5-minute PB as well was pretty special.
Yeah,
a few stats on her run. She was the only non-Kenyan athlete to make the podiums across the men's and women's elite field. And she ran the second fastest marathon in the UK this year, which puts her 26th on the all-time list. So, yeah, Philly Bowden is up there now with one of the best marathon runners of all time from the UK, which is just incredible to be saying.
What's particularly amazing about this is I remember it must have been just over a year ago. Philly was still working a very, very normal full-time job. And we went on a little 10-mile run around Hyde Park, and she was talking about how desperate she is to like turn herself to running full-time, like either by picking up a sponsorship or doing the content stuff full-time, but it wasn't quite like feasible. It wasn't quite realistic for her to, you know, just quit her job and start doing this full-time. So fast forward a year or so, she's making some of the best content, well, the best content on YouTube alongside yourself, Ben, I think, really, when it comes to following a runner's journey and being consistent with it and all that kind of stuff, making it entertaining. And to see her, you know, get that official deal with New Balance and now come third in a marathon like Copenhagen and run 2:29. Yeah, it's amazing. It goes back to what you were saying, Callum, about putting yourself out there on the internet, and how it's a daunting thing. But when you do it like Philly's done it as well, and then you have a blinder, it must feel like that feeling crossing the finish line. There's not that many human beings who get to feel what she probably felt at that moment in time. So it's
I can't believe you just snubbed Nick Bester's YouTube channel for being one of the No. I'm only kidding. I completely echo what you're saying about Philly. You know, I've had a few encounters with Philly, just in funny situations, and she seems like an absolutely lovely woman. I'm really pleased that it happened for her. And again, when you put stuff out there, you got to handle the good stuff and the bad stuff. So a lot of people saying you only got sponsored because you're an influencer, this, that, blah, blah, blah. She can now be like, actually, no, I held my own and I did this. But similarly, there is a lot of videos she's put out where, by her own admissions, she's had a shit race. And she's not done very well. So for someone to put out the crap stuff and put out when they've had the best moment, albeit we've not seen the video yet, but I'm sure it'll be really good, is exactly what you want, isn't it? You want a runner to be like, this was shit, this was shit, this was shit. But in the bigger picture, if you zoom out and look what I did over the last 9 months, I smashed my I smashed the main goal. I mean, we can all relate to that, can't we? Of having the ups and downs as we do on this podcast.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, it'll be really exciting to see where she goes from here now. Like 2:29 is a special run, but it's only her second marathon, for God's sake. Like she's still got so much left in the tank, right? She's at the beginning of that kind of journey to like true elite status, I suppose, now after that run. So yeah, good things coming for her, yeah. I reckon.
And before we move on to the other results, just a quick shout out to her boyfriend Dan. Daniel, he's basically the guy behind the camera. He does all of Philly's editing and is probably, to Philly's own admission, like the brains behind her YouTube channel and puts out all the content and makes it look all beautiful while she does the stuff in front of camera. So yeah, the two of them are absolutely smashing it right now. And see her get a PB on the while I was watching on the treadmill made me pretty emotional. But yeah, great to see her run.
Go on, Callum.
No, yeah, you go.
I was going to say, do yourself a favour if you watch her content and have done recently, but haven't seen like some of her first videos. I think Dan and her, they did a little vlog from Reading Half Marathon like last January, and it's not the best content you'll ever see in your life. So to see like the progression of that as well, like that's a shout out to Dan really for the amount that he's improved from like a editing standpoint, from just a general content creation standpoint, like the thumbnails he's making, like everything is spot on. Like they've got a really bloody good thing going. And it's not bravado either. Like, you know, you see some of these people and you wonder whether it's genuine or whether they're just putting on a jazz hands act for the camera, but she's like so genuine as well as a person, which just makes it even sweeter, doesn't it, when you see someone have a good result like that. Yeah, nice, very nice.
Yeah,
lovely,
big ups.
Wholesome content. Other results from Copenhagen Marathon. The race was won by Kenya's Rhoda Tanui on the women's side. She ran 2:23 for a new course record. Pretty impressive run from her. She had a pacer with her for I think around 30 kilometers, and then she dropped the rest of the field. Really impressive run from her. And on the men's side, it was won by Solomon Kirwa. He ran 2:09, and interestingly, both were wearing Li Ning shoes, which is a Chinese sportswear company. I don't know if you've seen or read much about the shoes they were wearing, Tom. They're called the Fedian 3 Ultra, and the cheapest I could find them in the UK were £380. I don't think they're available over here in
Europe. I'd sell out for Li Ning. Because yeah, the money they must be on, and I'd sit on this podcast and tell you to buy Li Ning. The money, like anyone who's on that deal, I bet they're getting good money, like relative. Yeah. And I bet I'm literally just chatting out my arse here when I say I bet these things are happening. What do I know? Absolutely nothing. But compared to like a really well established Nike deal or Adidas deal, and you hear about all the reductions they have and this bonus system, and it's basically very cutthroat. I can imagine if you're a good athlete and you're negotiating with Li Ning, you have a lot of like bargaining power.
Oh yeah.
Because surely their pool of athletes that they've got to go to is very limited of like who they're going to be able to help out, you know? But maybe it's one of these companies that's got like a ex, you know, like their CEO or like their whoever is like used to work at like a well-established Western company. I don't know. But yeah, interesting. I just clicked on the link you sent me and Tom, Ben, of the shoes, and they look pretty interesting.
Yeah.
So it was founded by Chinese Olympic gymnast, yeah, Li Ning, surprisingly.
Oh, there we go.
Nice one, Lee.
I've got their turnover from 2014 to 2021, and in 2021 they did nearly 2.6 million quid.
Yeah, that's amazing. Apparently, it just completely dominated the Chinese market when it comes to carbon racing shoes. So, yeah, expect to see that brand popping up a little bit more.
Yeah, a guy ran 2:06 in them at Valencia.
Yeah, that was the fastest run in them so far.
Solid.
Yeah, and one final athlete to mention was Anya Culling of Great Britain as well. She ran a new 2-minute PB of 2:34 for eighth place, which, again, if we didn't have just spent so long talking about Philly, we'd probably be mentioning Anya a bit more. Incredible run from the British athlete to finish in the top 10 again at such a world standard marathon is, again, really impressive. So, yeah, shout out to Anya as well.
Great running. Lululemon's latest athlete.
Yeah.
Running. Yeah, it is indeed. Was she wearing any Lululemon?
I know. Was it in the England kit?
England kit, of course, yeah.
Yeah, and obviously Lululemon don't make shoes, so.
No, well, they do, but not
Lululemon. Lululemon socks. Maybe the socks. Or the bra, I don't know. We'll have to get Anya's insight on that.
Yeah. They make great kit, by the way. Like, we can talk shit about Lululemon, but
no, I'm not.
One of their
I'm
stores.
Not talking shit about Lululemon.
But if you think about Lululemon, right, you might not necessarily associate them with making quality running focused stuff. But I was in the London store a little while ago, a few weeks ago, and I was looking at the men's half tights and singlets and everything else, and it's the dog's bollocks. Like the materials, like laser cut hems, like loads of storage, like Saw-esque kit.
Yeah, no, it's seriously good. We have a Lululemon store in Cambridge, and we occasionally go in. Alice wants to look at some gym kit or whatever, and I've had a look quite a few times at different bits and bobs, and it's extremely, it is at that premium end with both pricing but and with the quality and the way it is. I think the range of items is a bit limited for specifically for men's performance running, but I would imagine if you're an athlete for Lululemon, they're the sort of items that you just request and you're like, guys, like, I'm gonna need some split shorts or whatever, and then they use all the technology materials they've got to make you them. So no, I'm not at all shitting on Lululemon. Shout out to them. And I'm saying it's quite a good brand to be with as a sponsor, because you can still wear any carbon you want, which I'm guessing is in her thoughts of like, hang on a minute, the company's going to pay me just to wear their amazing clothes and I still get to wear whatever shoes I want. It's exactly like what I'm doing with Saw, where I get to wear the best running kit in the world, in my opinion, but also I get to benefit from any shoe technology from different brands, which is also very nice.
Yeah, 100%. That Under Armour situation, yeah, probably not as preferable as a Lulu kit deal, right?
No, and I'm guessing that's why, like, it's different if you're professional with Under Armour, because obviously before you sign anything like that, I'm sure you're going to have loads of testing of all the gear and shoes, and you're going to be able to have the conversations with the R&D and be like, look, if I'm signing a 3-year deal, where does this technology look like in 3 years? And they're going to disclose all that to you.
Yeah.
But I know for like the recent influencers in the running world that have done those Under Armour campaigns, they just signed a 3-month like ambassador deal, because why would you sign more? Do you know what I mean? If you're Anya and you're thinking, I'm going to crack a marathon in a few months, like, I really want to make sure I get what I'm valued and get some proper cash here, and I want to wear the best kit, you're not going to sign to wear like a Under Armour vest and some very average carbon shoes, are you? Why would you do that?
Yeah. Just quickly, before we move on, do you know, either of you have any idea what the prize pot was for Copenhagen?
Don't think it's a lot of money. I think it's about 6,000, maybe. Yeah. And I think that was if you broke the course record as well. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it was small. It was it was smaller than Night of 10K PBs. I know that.
Third place, 2,000 euros.
There we go. That'll pay for her flights and accommodation while she's there.
Yeah,
well, England will have paid for that, so that's all right.
Oh, yeah, true. Hopefully she gets a little bonus from New Balance as well. Mm. She bloody should after that run.
It should, yeah. There's got to be like a podium clause in every elite runner's contract, surely.
Maybe not podium, but I'm sure when she did her contract, she will have had some kind of sub 230 marathon or marathon PB. It will be a time related bonus with New Balance, I'm sure. But I say again, I'm sure. I'm not sure because I don't know. But if you've not done that, Philly, then get a new agent, because they should have done that.
There you go. Top tips from Callum. It says here you've got a shout out as well to one of your athletes, Jacob.
Oh, yeah. Shout out to Jacob. Jacob ran a 3:08 marathon. I definitely think he believes as well that he's in shape to run sub 3, but it was his first ever marathon. So 3:08 is really good. And he actually balances it with a very difficult military job, which I won't go into too much detail. But yeah, he's got a family and has to do all the family time stuff. But he also does a very active job with the military and tries to fit in marathon training. So it's a pretty difficult one. But I just thought I'd give him a shout out because, you know, it's the same 26 miles forever. So well done.
Mm. It looked warm as well towards the tail end of Copenhagen.
It did.
If you're out there,
it looked
like 3 hours plus. Roasting.
If I'm honest, when I was watching the race unfold, they didn't mention Philly at all until basically the end of the race when she was coming in the third. But I was half expecting her to be like, oh yeah, the race was a little bit warm, so I didn't quite run like as well as I'd hoped for. But even in those conditions, she smashed it. So yeah. Anyway, that's enough blowing smoke up Philly's ass.
We love you, Philly, if you're listening.
We do. Another final thing to mention.
Give us your HelloFresh brand deal.
Yeah, HelloFresh. New Balance Manchester, sign us up. We'll do a collab. The other record I want to mention was the 100K world record. It went down over the weekend again, broken by Alexander Sorokin of Lithuania. He was the previous world record holder of that distance, and he broke the world record by a mere 6 seconds. Great little world record there. Good, it come down to the wire, though. He ran 6 hours, 5 minutes and 35 seconds, which was 5 minutes 53 per mile average, or 3:39 per kilometer.
This guy is an animal, by the way. Have you heard much about him before?
You followed
his training. Yeah,
I followed him for a couple of years now.
Yeah, like absolute when you look at his training man. Weeks, like he does little Instagram updates, doesn't he, on his training weeks and all the rest of it. I don't know if he's on Strava. Is he on Strava?
I think so. Yeah,
he's got to be, right. Yeah. But like, you know, averaging almost 300K. A week, like 280, 290, like every,
yeah, if not more,
basically every week is ludicrous. Doing 60K long runs at like 340 pace, you know, madness.
Mm. And he trained in Kenya for a bit as well, didn't he?
Yeah, I saw some of those videos. Like he did a couple of Sweat Elite videos and stuff, didn't he? Of like,
yeah,
hideously long runs. I would love to like know more about people like this. Like, I wonder if they've been studied at all, because that's staggering, isn't it? 100K
it is
at that pace.
Yeah.
is, yeah, is wild.
I think I could be completely wrong, but I believe he got into running as a weight loss thing, maybe like 3 or 4 years ago, and he basically just got addicted to running, to training. And yeah, like you said, he's somebody who runs up to, I'm just on his Strava now, nearly 400 kilometers per week. It looks like he's gone a bit quiet on Strava in terms of uploading his training. I'm not surprised, being at the top end of the ultra running scene, he probably wants to keep it a bit of a secret. But
this adds to his record. So now he has the 100 mile record, and then he has the longest distance run in 6 hours, longest distance run in 12 hours, and longest run in 24 hours. And in in 24 hours, he ran 319.
Jesus.
Well, hang on, they've written this wrong here. The Athletics Weekly apparently said that he ran 319,614 kilometers in 24 hours. Was he on a jet?
I've just found it on Strava, actually. 322 kilometers, according to Strava, at 430 per kilometer. And it was on an athletics track, by the look of things, Verona, Italy.
210 laps.
That is ridiculous.
Is he pro? Is he like
Yeah, he's a sponsored athlete. He's professional. Yeah, he does it
with
as his full time job with a security company. I think they're called Norda Security.
Wow.
Yeah.
They just pay him a wage.
Yeah.
He wears
Nike Alpha Flies for these runs.
Yeah.
The new ones.
I wonder if if you just like went for a actually listen to the question last week. Who would you have dinner with? Who would you have a dinner party with? Alexander Sorokin is now top of my list.
Yeah, he'd be a pretty interesting one, wouldn't he?
What does he speak English?
I don't know.
Yeah, he speaks English, yeah.
But what? Yeah, wow. I'd just love to study his brain. Mm. Like, what possesses you to run that much?
Yeah,
right?
Crazy.
And just keep doing it. Yeah, wild. Anyway.
Yeah, that pretty much summarizes the weekly running news. Got a few listeners' questions, listener shout outs, and that'll be it for episode 22. Where should we start with some questions?
Well, we've just got the one listener shout out, so should we do that first?
Yeah,
go for it. Yeah.
Do you want to do this one, Ben? Because you've
yeah, sure. It was just from Mason, who is a college student out in the US. He wrote to us a few weeks ago to say that he was trying to break 19 minutes in his next race for the 5K, but unfortunately, he wrote in to say it didn't quite go to plan. He ran 21:37, which is still a great time, but he had to deal with calf cramp after 2 miles. Which he said slowed him down a bit. But yeah, hopefully get a good bit of training in and he can crack on to that sub 19 goal.
Yeah. Nice one, Mason. Unlucky.
Yeah, it happens to the best of us. Running is not always linear in terms of the way the PBs tumble. So yeah, stick at it.
Right. Should we do a question?
Yeah, go for it. Quite a lengthy one there for you, Tom, but we'll maybe skip that one first.
Yeah, that's a big old question. I've not even read through that, to be honest.
Blimey.
I know, that's it. Tom, maybe you scan that while I...
Yeah, have a little read of that, Tom. It's a lovely email, by the way. I had a read through it all.
I'll get my reading glasses out.
But maybe just one for you personally. Yeah.
Yeah, well, this is a good one because this is very fitting for you, Ben, I think. This one's kind of... You're a content creator on this topic. Sam has written in. I don't know your surname. I don't know if you're male or female, but this is Sam. 22. Oh, his. Okay, he's a male. 22 was his first year of running, and he saw his times improve quickly. But since then, despite being consistent in his training, his time improvements are plateauing. Question: what is a reasonable progression to aim for between training blocks? For example, if after an 8-week training block, training for a 10K, what should his target be? His PB is 36:58. So this question is basically saying, my PB is about 37 minutes. I'm going to do an 8-week block and then I'm going to run a 10K, but I don't know what my target should be. How does he calculate it? What should it be, Benjamin?
Yeah, that's a bloody tough question, I think. I don't really know where to start. I was hoping to ask you that one, Callum.
Oh, well, my answer would just be don't make the target
a
8 weeks out.
Yeah,
like don't set unless you've got your heart set on a time for a particular reason. You get to a certain point where a PB is a PB. It's nice to if you're making videos and you want to tell yourself like, okay, this is the sub 36:30 project, or I'm going for sub 37 or whatever it is. But when you start to get down and the times are towards the maximum of your potential, every second is way more valuable. So I would just say, okay, I'm doing 8 weeks of training. I would focus on the process, not the goal, and be like, okay, what am I going to do to achieve the best time possible? I'm going to do these types of sessions. I'm going to do this kind of thing. And yeah, if 3 weeks out, you want to do quote unquote a 10K specific session and you need to put a pace on it, then that's where you're going to have to use a bit of your logic and go, okay, is it realistic that I'm going to take 2 minutes off? Probably not. You know, has my tempo session slightly improved? Is my heart rate slightly improved? Those kind of indicators, and just do a session at what you think could be a suitable pace. And maybe you're going to go for a 20-second PB or a 10-second PB, something like that. But yeah, the short answer for what I've just said is don't set a goal from the very start. You don't need to.
Yeah, I don't really have an answer, but I can empathize a little bit, because I think similar to me, like my progress when I first started running was very quick. I was able to just chop minutes off every PB, like every time I raced or tried to run a little bit faster. It's always going to slow down a little bit. And I struggled with that myself, because I think I ran similar to this, like 35 high maybe on like my first 10K race. And I was like, oh, I'll run like sub 30 in a few months at this rate. And it just doesn't work like that, does it? So, yeah, just knuckle down, enjoy the process, enjoy the training, and remember that you've only been running since bloody 2022. You've got a lot of years left to, run faster. So don't obsess over times at the moment, because they'll come when you do the right training.
Yeah, I think before we move on to the next question, with setting goals for races, something I did when I was more fairly new to running was sort of have like an A, B, and C goal. So my A goal would be for Sam would be like sub 36 minutes, knock 58 seconds off my PB. My B goal would be to set a personal best, so anything quicker than your current PB of 36:58. And then a C goal would be like get some race experience from doing another 10K and then build on from what you learn for the next one. So that when you're in the race situation, if you're not on for your A goal race, you can basically refocus. And you can be like, right, at least I've got my B goal race. I'm not going to hit sub 36 today, but at least I can try and go for a PB. So
yeah. The other thing you could do, which is a bit more rogue, but would also be good to make sure that you don't completely mess it up on race day by going way too fast, is let's say 3 weeks before you're going to do a session where you do 8 times a kilometer off 60 seconds rest or something like that. Do try and run that pace at like a reasonably outrageous time, or something that would be very ambitious. And if you can't well within your means, do the 8 times a K off 60 seconds rest at, you know, say 34:30 pace. If you can't do in the session, there's no way you're going to do 10 times a K with zero rest in the race at that pace. So you'll know on race day, okay, that's like my upper boundary, if you know what I mean. That's like the maximum limit that I can't exceed. So then you're not going to blow it. But yeah, I would just go for a PB. If you get any kind of PB, that's great. You can do another 10K race and just keep chopping it down in the way you have until you reach a ceiling.
Definitely. Good question, though, I think.
Good
answers out of us there.
Very good.
I hope that helps.
I'm not going to... So Lynn is the lovely lady that wrote in with a very long message, it's fair to say. I've skimmed through it, and essentially she had a very long period, an arduous journey of injuries, right? Back to back, didn't run for over a year and so on. But this year alone, this is more of a shout out really than a question, to be honest. So we'll make this another listener shout out to Lynn. This year alone, she has got her first county vest at cross country and has set PBs across both 5K and 10K. And she's 48 years old. She's feeling fitter and stronger than ever, and she's hopeful that she can get a marathon PB this year too. She said, I thought my running days were done, but now I'm excited for the rest of the year. And she said, there's light at the end of the tunnel, Tom. Persevere. So I like that. Thank you very much, Lynn, for writing in.
Keep reading, Tom. What did she say at the end, in the brackets?
That you've just put in green on our show notes. Also, I hope this proves you all wrong, that middle-aged women do listen to the three of you. Why wouldn't we? You are the most entertaining running podcast out there.
Lynn. Thank you, Lynn.
You are our new favourite listener, Lynn. Well done.
Love a bit of Lynn.
Yeah.
What a legend. Yeah, no, seriously, well done, Lynn. And I believe it says you're doing Valencia Marathon, so good luck at Valencia later in the year.
Yeah, let's keep us updated with your progress. It's always nice to get people who regularly write in, isn't it?
Definitely.
Awesome. I think one more question could be in order, boys. What do you think?
Yeah, go on, Callum.
I
quite fancy Andrew's question. Who says, he says, boys, when you started running, he didn't say boys, he just said when you started running. I just added that.
He's called Andrew, he must be a geezer.
Just in case you're listening, Andrew, and you're like, I didn't write that. So Andrew says, when you started running, did you experience any issues with your running form? If so, what did you do to fix/improve your running form?
Yeah, one of the things I personally didn't necessarily have an issue with, but I noticed that when I was fatiguing in races, my arm swing was going more from sort of a linear motion to a side to side sort of swinging dinosaur arms type form, which I recognized myself as not being very efficient. Any sort of motion in terms of running form that isn't in the sort of forward direction is something you want to try and minimize. So I've spent maybe, well, I did a lot originally. I did a lot of running on the treadmill where I could sort of see my reflection in the glass, and I would focus on my arm swing, making sure I'm sort of like swinging my elbows back to try and sort out my form issues that I had with my arms, because that was causing stomach cramping and issues towards the end of races. So in terms of my experience in running form, that's one thing I personally tried to iron out. But I've never had a gait analysis done or anything like that. Have you guys done anything to improve yours?
This is a good question, because it's something I've been thinking about quite a lot recently. Whilst not running for so long, you spend a lot of your time watching other people run. Like where I work from home, I sit right by the window and I see runners go past all the time. When I'm out and about, I'll always watch people run. And you see, you know, let's be honest, you see some real horror forms out there, right? Things that just look painful. It looks very uncomfortable for some people when they're running. And that's not an attempt to slate them or belittle them in any way. But I think one of the things is a lot of people have never seen themselves run. They might have never seen a video of themselves running. And when I got into it, I was watching basically any running content that I could find on YouTube. But there was before Sweat Elite, there was a Parker Stinson series with Trackster, not Trackstar, but Trackster in the States, which was basically just him training for Houston Marathon, maybe. But I remember looking at his form thinking, bloody hell, that is a sexy running form. And when I worked in the running shop, there was treadmills everywhere. And if there was a bit of downtime, I would just film myself running for a bit and see what it looked like, see what my foot strike was like, see what the arm carriage and stuff was like, and just try and make subtle tweaks there. And it feels a bit weird at first, but if you're consistent with it, right, eventually it just becomes second nature. So I used to just film myself run. After a run, I'd put my phone on a lamppost or lean it against the bench or something, run past a couple of times, see what it looked like, and just sort of, make subtle tweaks and improvements, I suppose, from there.
I personally would love to make some sort of YouTube content on this, actually. I think that would be really interesting to get my form analysed and, see if I can find some ways of improving and seeing how that affects something like your time over the course of a marathon. I think I was listening to a podcast this week. I think it was for the Kudos with Brett Robinson. And he was talking about he gets his running form sort of like looked at every now and again. And he's somebody running like 2:06 for the marathon. I think I've probably might have got that wrong, but he's Australian record holder for the marathon anyway. And he was saying he has somebody look at his form and give him little things that he can tweak, which he notices a big improvement on. So be interested to see what results would come from that, to be honest with you.
The only thing I'd add is strength work is a massive thing of correcting any imbalances that you've got. So running form is important when you're looking for a lot of marginal gains, and it's important if it's causing you any discomfort or injury. But generally speaking, if you watch the Diamond League steeplechase and you watch the state of how some of the steeplechasers jump over the barriers, you'll realize that actually they're still way faster than people who hurdle with perfect form. similarly, if you watch Mark Scott destroy me in the 2017 Great North Run, but his leg, he looks like he's dragging his leg along with him. He runs so weird, but he's still, you know, the British record holder and one of the greatest runners the country's had. Mm. So running form matters to an extent. And I would say, Andrew, depending on what the reason is that you're looking at your running form, if you think, oh, I just run a bit odd compared to all my running mates, then it might be a real subtle thing, like Tom's saying, like, just film yourself, you know, maybe look in the mirror on the treadmill, try and, you know, correct it a little bit. If it's actually causing you a pain and you're like, oh, my left knee really hurts, I think it's because I run like this or that sort of thing, that's where you maybe want to get a gait analysis or go to the gym and look at how you might be able to strengthen up some of the muscles on your left-hand side so you know your legs moving the same as the right or whatever the slight thing might be. But yeah, running form is a big thing that I just hate seeing people paying online for running form analysis, qualified running gait instructor. Yeah. So I implore everyone, do not do that, because you could go on Google right now and Google how to become a qualified gait analysis instructor, put yourself through a 2-hour online shitty course for £35 and you've got the badge to be able to put on online and charge people for. Go to a professional and pay more money than you're probably going to have to want to pay, but at least you know that they're doing it properly. And that sort of person should also be doing VO2 max testing, lactate testing. They need to have a fully qualified, like fully set up lab and actually mm-hmm. be the dog's bollocks. Otherwise, anyone can look at you and go, oh, I think your right arm, you know, flares out a little. Maybe we could work on this by not flaring it out, you know? It's like that sort of thing.
100%. Anyone can work in, again, like when I first started running and wanted to get super involved with it is when I started working in running shops, but I knew nothing about biomechanics. I got no background in it whatsoever. And it took, it was like 2 days of, here's an iPad filming someone running slow motion. Here's a neutral shoe, a stability shoe, and like a slightly in the middle shoe. See how it impacts how the person runs. Ta-da! You can now do gait analysis on the general public. Like there's no rhyme or reason to it, really. And like you say, there's so many runners you can look at, Reed Fisher, Charlotte Perdue, Katata, who have got, you know, if you look at them run, it's a bit funky, Jess Judd, but they're incredibly efficient because that's what the way that their body wants to move, right? So there's no perfect running form. And yeah, like what Callum said, don't get sucked into snake oil salesmen on the internet who are like, I can correct your running form and it's only going to cost X amount of money. Go to a professional, a proper one.
Sounds good.
Awesome. Awesome stuff.
Lovely stuff. Yeah, I reckon that wraps up episode 22. Anything else to add, boys? Week ahead, what's to come?
I've got a race in Germany, so fly there on Friday. Race on Saturday, and before that I've just got I've got a session with the group tomorrow that Charlie's coming down to film, kind of a bit of an insight into the Cambridge training group, a few of the different guys, just how we get along.
Oh, that'd
sort
be cool.
Of thing, which I think people I love might that. Find quite cool. And apart from that, no, just working away. It's busy at work at the moment, which is great for surviving but not so good for wanting to run and relax. So there you go.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Tom,
you
Yeah, busy bloody week. I'm up at the absolute arse crack of dawn tomorrow. I'm going down to the ProDirect head offices in Devon for a couple of days just to shoot some bits and shake some hands and have a few meetings and all that stuff. So that's Tuesday, Wednesday. Come back late Wednesday, Thursday at home, and then off to London on Friday for some interview bits and bobs. And then night of the 10Ks. On Saturday, followed by Hackney Half on Sunday. And then I might try and have a day off on Monday. We'll see.
I think you earn it after that.
Yeah, it's a bit of a blockbuster week, this one.
Yeah, I think we're going to have a lot to talk about next week.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah. I hope there's some good stories that come out of the weekend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got my 3K race on Saturday, night of the 10,000s as well. And again, I'll be down at Hackney Half spectating. Cheering on Ellie Felton. Big shout out to Ellie. Come on. She's going to get a half marathon PB for the Feltons.
Go on, Ellie.
Go on, Ellie. But yeah, I think that'll do for today's episode, boys.
Yeah. If you do see us, not Callum, obviously, unless you happen to live in this obscure German town and listen to the podcast by some miraculous coincidence. If you see...
Or if you're one of the British runners that's also going.
Yeah, if you're one of them. But if you see us knocking about, come and say hello, and we can have a little chin wag, can't we? Have a nice little knees up at some running events over the weekend.
Sounds good.
Yeah, and if you do see Ben and Tom, ask them for a photo. So then we've got some content to put on our Instagram, because we don't really have much content, because obviously we record this all remotely, so we can't do like funny things and be like, haha, here's a cool video. But if we had just a bank of photos of us with listeners, that'd be great, just to shill them out every week, and that'd be unlimited likes on Instagram. So
what you're asking for is, if anyone fancies making us some content, that would be great.
Yeah, basically, if you just say, oh, would I be able to grab a photo? And then once you've taken the photo on your own phone, offer to airdrop it back to the person. So say like, oh, Ben, can I get a photo with you? Take the photo and then say, oh, do you want a copy of that, mate? And then Ben will say...
for your records.
Ben will say, oh, I'd actually love a copy of that, thanks, because that'll be perfect for our Instagram. And it won't be awkward, because I've now given you kind of the whole kind of permission and storyline. It's built for you there. So I'd love to see that. Thanks.
The hard work's done.
Yeah, just pretend you want a photo with us if you see us. Even if you delete it afterwards, after you sent the airdrop, that's fine.
Even better, just take a photo of Ben and Tom from afar. And
that's better.
DM it to the podcast Instagram, so then we can use the photo.
Yeah, I like that. Run it three ways in the wild. Let's get that. Yeah. Let's get some momentum with that going, shall we?
Yeah.
If you get me and Tom in one photo, I reckon that deserves a shout out as well.
Yeah, 100%. If you can pap us and we don't like notice, and you can send it to the, you can DM it to the Instagram account, and we've got no idea that photo was taken or that it existed, we'll come up with some prize for you.
Sounds good. Way to end the episode, but there we go. See you next week, boys. Thanks for that.
See you soon, folks.
Love you, Cubbly.
Bye bye. We'll be right back.